There was a knock at the door. "Come in," said Daniel. And in came a man with some very bad news. "You're going to be cut into pieces," he said. "Cut into little pieces. And I'm here to collect you and take you away and cut you into little pieces." Now, I don't know why he had to go and explain all of this. I don't know whether he needed to weigh up how heavy these pieces would be so he could put them in a wheelbarrow and take them away, or whether he had to measure them up. There's a story in my family about my Auntie Betty, who lived in Zambia, and she married a missionary she met in Zambia, and she wanted to be buried next to him. And one day she was very, very sick, and everybody said, "I think she's going to die." And somebody came along and measured her up while she was in bed to see how big they needed to make the coffin. So I think it was something like that. "You're going to be cut into pieces," said the man. "And King Nebuchadnezzar has said so." Now, we know a little bit about what King Nebuchadnezzar looked like. And the reason is somebody found a coin with his face on it. And you might think that he has very peculiar ears. But actually, I think he was wearing some sort of a helmet. He was a military man. We know a little bit about him. "King Nebuchadnezzar has said so. And we've been sent to collect all the wise men." "You are one of them, aren't you?" he said. "Well, now, if King Nebuchadnezzar has said this, we have a big problem. If you're going to be cut into pieces on the order of King Nebuchadnezzar." He was what you might call a big cheese. He was the biggest king of the biggest empire of the whole world. And if he said something, then it had to happen. And so we might say he's a very big cheese or possibly a very big wine bottle. Anyway, if you were in Babylon and the all-powerful king was furious, and he was furious and said, "You should be cut into pieces and your house should be turned into rubble," what would you do? What would you do? Let's get into the story. I mean, it's all very well thinking, "Oh, that's just Daniel, it's a long time ago." What would you do if somebody came to your door and said, "The most powerful person in the world has just told me you've got to be cut into pieces"? What would you do? Would you panic? Well, Daniel did three things that I hope we can learn from. The first thing that Daniel did, we're told, is that he used his brains, he used his wisdom, and he used his tact. Very diplomatic. And he relied on God. And perhaps he thought back, I don't know if you can remember back as far as a couple of weeks ago when we did Daniel chapter 1. Daniel went to a guy called Ashpenaz in Daniel chapter 1. And he went to Ashpenaz and said, "Can we just try something here?" And he negotiated with him, and God gave him favor in the eyes of Ashpenaz. And Ashpenaz says, "All right, we've got 10 days, we'll give it a go. We'll see how your diet stacks up against eating all this rich king's food." And perhaps Daniel was relying on God to do the same thing when he went and he spoke to the official, to Arioch. And he used his brains, his wisdom, and his tact, and he went and spoke to the commander of the king's guard. That's one thing Daniel did. And another thing that Daniel did is he spoke to his fellow Hebrews, his fellow believers in God. Now, we call them by various names. We call them Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah at the beginning of Daniel, because that's their Hebrew names. And then when Daniel switches in chapter 2 here, halfway through, he switches into Aramaic. They've got some other names. But at the moment, that's what we're calling them. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He spoke to them, and he shared with them what the problem was. And if we want to learn from this, we're going to need to make good friends with other people who believe and trust in God. If we're going to learn from what Daniel did, that's what we're going to need to do. And we're going to need to make good friends with them before we get to an impossible situation like somebody's just told us we're going to be cut into pieces. And the third thing. So Daniel got together with other people who didn't rely on himself. You know, sometimes we think that the Christian thing to do, if we've got a problem, is we get a Bible out. And we just find a verse that's going to help us. That's not actually what Daniel did at the time. The third thing he did was he prayed, and he asked his friends to pray as well. He urged them to plead for mercy to the God of heaven. He asked them to pray. So, that's three things that Daniel did, three things that we can learn from. When Daniel was faced with what seemed to be a completely impossible situation, he trusted in God. And he showed his trust in God because he went to talk to the commander of the king's guard. Now, if Nebuchadnezzar is big and almighty, well, the commander of his guard is also pretty high up. He trusted in God to help him as he had that conversation. Well, it seems that the king had been unable to sleep. You might think that somebody who's got all the power and all the riches in the world, surely he would find it easy to sleep. He'd have nothing to worry about, would he? He would just be able to sleep calmly. But it seems he hadn't been able to sleep. The Bible says that he had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So he summoned the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. And I had some fun this week looking up what all these different people are, and apparently it depends on what sort of a dream you've had. And of course you don't know what the interpretation is until they've arrived, so you have to ask them all, because if it's a dream about your health, you might need one sort of a thing, and if it's a dream that comes from some sort of bad spirit or something, you might need something else, and so on and so on and so forth. And there were people who had been interpreting dreams for thousands of years, and they'd written down interpretation books, and they had loads of tablets, and they had to look them all up. All sorts of different ways of interpreting dreams. And you might think about all the different sorts of wise men that he had. And it's very similar to a story that we read about King Pharaoh. And he had some dreams, and he asked wise men to say, what does this dream mean? And it turned out to be about 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. Pharaoh had had dreams, and he sent for wise men to interpret them. Daniel said, it's not me as a wise man who interprets it. It is not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else. He makes that very plain to the king. He says, it is God who reveals. It is God who has revealed this, and it is God who reveals mysteries. There is a God in heaven. Now, the Jewish people had to explain to other people who lived around them that it wasn't the God of Israel, because people would then think, oh, that's only a God if you happen to be in Israel. If you're not in Israel, it's not a God. So they used to say, the God who made heaven and earth, the God of heaven is how they used to describe it. So Daniel explains that the God who made heaven is the one who can reveal mysteries. And he says it's that same God who has made Nebuchadnezzar king. Nebuchadnezzar didn't make himself king. Well, he thought he had. He'd won lots of battles. He'd done lots of stuff to become king. Killed lots of people. But God, the God in heaven, had actually made him king. That's what Daniel told him. Daniel said, you are that head of gold. Now, when Daniel interpreted the dream, he only explained a few bits of it. He interpreted the head of gold. You are the head of gold. And he interpreted that the others are other kingdoms. If you're interested, you can spend years having a look at all the different theories there are as to what the silver and the bronze and the iron mixed with clay signify exactly, but it doesn't seem to make a difference to Nebuchadnezzar. He just needed to know certain things. There was the gold, and after that was another kingdom, slightly lesser, and after that a kingdom, and so on and so forth, until finally there was a stone that was cut without human hands, he said. So he must have seen the stone and seen that it was somehow specially cut out of a mountain somewhere, not by human hands, and it came and it destroyed this enormous, this colossal statue. And it was just, it turned into little pieces, and it was, the Bible says, it was like chaff, which is on a threshing floor, which the wind blows away, and there is no trace. So I did think about this, and I thought, well, not many people have seen chaff, and we need to kind of understand what it's like. So I need two volunteers. One, two. Thank you. If you both come forward, and if you just wait there in front of the picture for the moment. Oh, thank you. And I've got some chaff. And Graham, if you would just look out the window there, just behind you. Now, what I want you to do, you two volunteers, is I want you to look underneath there and you will find a couple of things to help you, some brooms and things. And I want you to see if you can collect the chaff for me. Have a go. Can you collect up all the chaff for me? Thank you. This statue had been turned into tiny pieces of chaff that the wind blows away and doesn't leave a trace. So there's lots of things, as I've mentioned earlier, that we can learn from Daniel, from this experience that he had. One of the things that we learn is that he talked about God. And that's a great example to us. You might think, well, you know, that was normal, he did. But if you think about it a bit more, he was in a society and an institution where they didn't talk about God. They had their own gods. They never talked about the God of heaven. Daniel talked about God. Daniel trusted in God. He relied on him when he got into these very difficult situations. He trusted in God. And Daniel prayed to God when he got his friends together to pray. And Daniel cared for other people. One of the things that struck me is that if you look at the end of the story in Daniel chapter 2, you will see that Daniel was placed in charge of all the wise men. And if you stop and think about that, that means that Daniel not only saved himself by interpreting the king's dream, he saved all the other wise men. Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, and all the other wise men as well. And he saved the whole empire from having lost all its wise men, because then I think it probably would have got into lots of trouble. So there's a lot that we can learn from Daniel. How are you guys getting on? Most of that looks kind of blackish. I don't think that's the chaff. But anyway, if you have a look in that vase that's on the table, see if any of the chaff went in there. Is there any chaff in there? But if not, you can take what's in there as a reward for your efforts. Thank you very much. Now, where is Jesus? We believe that the whole Bible is put together to teach us about Jesus. And where is Jesus in this story? Well, I'll tell you where he is. That rock that was cut out without human hands. Jesus was not an ordinary sort of a person. You remember he was born of the Virgin Mary, which is completely unhuman way for someone to start their life. So Jesus, we can see in this story, in the stone or the rock that was cut out without human hands and which destroyed all the other kingdoms and started a completely new kingdom, a completely different kind of kingdom. We find this out, that God uses pictures in the Bible and they all come together and they all help us to understand from different angles. And stones that have not been cut out and things that are unhewn and not quarried have a special meaning in the Bible. A rock was cut out, Daniel said in the dream, but not by human hands. And we see that as Jesus and the New Testament, people who wrote the New Testament, they also looked back and said, well, I remember Jesus is the living stone. Jesus is a stone or a rock. Now, we haven't got time this morning to look at all the other places in the Bible that mention the connection between Jesus and a stone. One of the things that we might have had time to look at, but we don't have time to look at, is how this story is similar to another giant who is brought crashing down by a stone in the story of David and Goliath. And we don't have time to look at what it means about the mountain of the Lord, the big kingdom that grows and grows and is like a huge mountain. And we don't have time to look at the stone that was rejected and the story that Jesus told and how he said there was a son who came to a vineyard, and then he changes the analogy and he talks about a stone that the builders rejected. And we can see that the Son of God is the same as a stone. But we don't have time to look at all of that this morning. What we do need to understand is how God speaks to us. He speaks to us through dreams. He spoke to Nebuchadnezzar through a dream. And excitingly, God still speaks to people by dreams today. Sometimes people who have never heard of him before. Nebuchadnezzar, I don't know if he really knew about the God of heaven, about our God, before. But he had a dream that came from God. And very excitingly, some people who live in countries where they never hear about God sometimes have a dream about Jesus. God speaks that way. But most importantly, God has spoken to us through Jesus Christ. And we can read about him in the Bible, and we can read about all the things that he's taught us to do. We have been given, through what we know about Jesus and what we know in the Bible, we have been given the secrets of the kingdom of heaven. It has been revealed to us. It's been revealed through the Bible. And Jesus took what was in the Bible, he took what was in the Old Testament, the stories before he was even born on earth, and he explained how all the scriptures concerned himself. And that's something we can see in this part of the Bible, that it teaches us a little bit about Jesus. So Nebuchadnezzar had a revelation from God, and he was told what the meaning was, and he was given a chance to respond to that. And we read that Nebuchadnezzar said, well, Daniel, your God is a very great God. He rewarded Daniel. He said, you've done what we asked you to do. He said, your God must be greater than all the other gods. And he kind of recognized that God had spoken, and this was very special and very different and not like any other God he'd met. But that's as far as it went. We don't read that he changed his life. We don't read that he gave up his other gods. He just said, well, that's very interesting. What an amazing God that is. And that's how he responded. How do we respond? We've been given the secrets of the kingdom of heaven. What about us?
That's true.